Hello, welcome to the Hoops of Huddle podcast. I am Malika Walker, and this is our weekly trip to the Rewind, looking at the past of men's and women's sports. Today, we're going to look into basketball, men's basketball to be specific, and we're going to cover a lot of hoop topics, you know, on this pod. But today, I had to officially launch the rebrand of my pod with the greatest what if of all time, Lynn Bias. And I had to bring Mark because Mark, you know, him being a trainer to some of your favorite NBA players and knowing the history of the game, Lynn Bias is just one of those players that we will both always wonder, what if he made it to the NBA? What if he was able to join the Boston Celtics and help extend the careers of some of the greatest, like Larry Bird and Mikhail and some of those others? What if, you know, he was able to, him and Reggie Lewis, I think it was, right, were able to play against, you know, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen? What would the results have been? Because people like to say, oh, Lynn was this, Lynn was that. But we will never know because the 6'8 wonder never played a game in the NBA. So I'm welcoming Mark to the pod, and I'm excited to talk about Lynn Bias with him. So introduce yourself, Mark.
Mark Edwards, been training players for 30 years. I think my first guy went pro back in 2001. I like to stay behind the scenes. I really like to have the players have their shine, so I don't put like videos out and stuff like that. But I've had NBA All-Stars. I've had NBA champions. I've had college champions, high school state champions. For me, it's a labor of love. Watching people like Lynn Bias, I still would love to develop a player, you know, in his resemblance, you know, but it's so difficult because he was so disciplined. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The way he played the game, he simplified the game. He had a talent. He had the skill set. He had the determination. He worked. The work ethic was crazy. And you saw him improve over his 4-year career at Maryland.
Yep. And Lynn Bias, I mean, of course, he hails from Prince George's County in Maryland. He was one of four children, you know, growing up. He had one sister, three boys. He was the middle boy. So he had a younger brother. He had an older brother. And University of Maryland, they were blessed to get this talent. They knew that they had someone that was raw, that had a lot of talent. So when we think about, you know, Lynn Bias as a freshman, you know, like he really got his name when you look at him in terms of he didn't start his freshman year. That didn't start to his sophomore year. But you saw flourishes, like, of who he would become at Maryland his freshman year.
Yeah, you saw bits and pieces of him his freshman year. You saw some potential. Especially when they played against North Carolina, I think he got up for those games against Michael Jordan. They didn't necessarily check each other, but, you know, on switches and on occasions when they, you know, went at each other, it was amazing because, you know, Mike was going to his junior year. That was 83, 84. That was Lynn's sophomore year. And, I mean, you could just see it. You could see him coming. And I think the transition from his freshman to his sophomore year was the strength training. The word I got was he started lifting weights for the football team. And he was a slender build, but you could see, I mean, he started cutting up. You know, his body just kept getting stronger and stronger every year. He started just jumping. He would dunk on you with reckless abandon. Like, he'd taken off outside the lane with two hands and daring you to jump. And he was menacing on the court, you know, and he played the game the right way. One dribble, two dribble, pull up, jumpers. They didn't have threes in the ACC back then. They actually had it his freshman year. And he might have shot about 27%, 25% or whatever. But he definitely extended his range to, you know, legit possibly NBA range. Even though he didn't necessarily take a bunch of long twos or whatever, you could see the range on his jump shot. There was no stopping him. You know, them playing zone meant nothing to him. You know, he was an immovable force.
Yeah, and I'm just realizing I started off without the microphone, so my cat started making noise. I was like, let me get on the mic and put my headphones on here. And when you I think another thing that people, like, now you see players working out together in the summer. You see, you know, that players played against each other in AAU. MJ and Lynn Bias met, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like on a, you know, like when you look at some of those back then, like now you have the camps. They had like the Nike and other camps back then, right? So they actually had an opportunity to meet and play one another in those type of settings. And I always wish that we can have like ample video and, you know, of the greats of that time in these camps, not just them. I would have loved to.
They didn't put an emphasis on that back in the days. You know, the camcorders back then were huge. You know, it was like big, and it was on your shoulder, and very few people could afford those things. But the footage, the pieces of footage you get to see of Michael Jordan when he was young is just incredible.
He was so scrawny too. Like when you look at him, especially compared to Lynn Bias, MJ was small.
Yeah, he was light. I think going into the NBA, he was like 6'6", 185, 190, yep. I think. So I think his rookie year, he might have been 195.
But Lynn Bias was like 6'8", and 200, 210. You know,
yeah, he's about 210. Yeah, he's about 210. Solid. Yep. You know, both guys, very low body fat. You know, both of them probably had 2 to 3% body fat. Mm-hmm. And that meant something. You know, that meant they're utilizing so much more muscle than most athletes, you know. So with Mike, the crazy thing about Michael Jordan is when people look at those college and early NBA highlights, they like, well, those guys he's playing against must not have been that good because he's just running by them and they look slow. No, Michael Jordan had world-class speed.
Yep.
And that's the thing people can't understand. They can't understand and they don't believe.
They forget the athleticism and all of that of Michael Jordan at the time. Like, young Mike was... Yeah, Mike was a different cat.
It was it's crazy because I've been watching him since he was a freshman in college. Mm-hmm. And I would always get word from North Carolina about him. You know, I was a big basketball guy when I was younger. So the word I got was that as a freshman, he ran a 4.5 40 and 4.5 4.6, many 4.5s, and he long jumped 25 feet. That's crazy. That's crazy athletic.
That's crazy. And the reason why we're setting this up, because it's important, I just think it's important to understand, like, you know, Mike was Mike. We know young Mike was athletic. He was jumping like a pogo stick, jumping all over the place. Mm-hmm. And young Mike was who young Mike was, like from 84, you know, to 86, 87. Lynn Bias, you know, like, you know, MJ was between 6'5 and 6'6, because sometimes I wonder if he was 6'6, to be honest. He was between 6'5 and 6'6. He wasn't, you know, when he got in the league, he wasn't quite 200 yet. Over time, he, like he gained, you know, muscle, I guess. But Lynn Bias was a 6'8, 210. You know, he was, you know, like he was a lot bigger than MJ. They played different positions, but let's talk about Lynn Bias from the time he started starting at Maryland in his sophomore year. And then as time went on, like, as you know, as we look at, you know, him each year, like his sophomore year, he was at 15 points a game, 5 rebounds. His junior year, he was at 19 points a game, 7 rebounds, and same, and then 23 points a game his senior year and 7 rebounds. So as you look at that progression of you know, the games he played, you know, he, you know, from the time he started, that was it. You know, that was it. So
yeah, his shooting ability.
His
shooting ability is something that you want to marvel at. You know, you're talking about his field goal percentage. He was, I mean, he shot probably
like 50.53%.
I mean, just
that's crazy.
His free throw percentage his senior year was something that still amazes me. He shot like 86% on like seven attempts.
Like 86.
Yeah.
That got better each year too.
That requires so much discipline. You know, his form never changed. His leaping ability. I mean, just he was a force. I can remember watching him catch an alley-oop and dunk on a player. And and he comes down and his arms are like straight up in the air like this. And he hits the player in the head and the player's like getting ready to step to him. And the referee jumps in the middle and he puts his hand on referee's chest and said, chill, I got this. And he was like, he just started talking to the player like, yeah. You know, whatever he was saying, I don't know. But I'm looking at him like, he's in command. Like,
man,
it was his world. Like, it was nothing you could do to stop him.
Nothing you could do.
Nothing.
I feel like Red Auerbach had his eye on him early because he invited him to a camp, I believe, between his junior and senior year. So he had his eyes on Len Bias, you know, before he even had the opportunity to draft him.
Who was the first pick in that draft? 86.
The 86 draft? That's a good question. Who was the first pick in the 86 draft? Let me look up the 1986. I don't know why these emojis.
Brad Daugherty. And back then, you couldn't walk away from a skilled seven-footer. Seven-footer, the game was played inside out back in the
80s. Yeah, back then, you had to take size.
You had to take him. And that was the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was the missing piece for that Cavaliers team that eventually was a multiple 60-win team. Yeah, they were the best team in the NBA at a juncture.
Even when they look at the other drafts, like the 84 draft, you know, and 85 draft, like you had to take that 7-footer, you know, that was the pick. Like there was, and you know, like whenever you speak to GMs at that time, it's like, oh, there was, and even the GMs of the teams that ended up like, they're like, no, we, there's no way we would have picked him, you know, and the pick made another pick. So yeah, Brad Daugherty made perfect sense in a point.
And he was young. He was young coming out of, coming out of high school. I mean, I think he got to high school. He was like 16.
Yeah, because he came out a senior. He came out a senior. So, he probably was high school. He came out early because he was a senior when he came out. Len, of course, went second to Boston Celtics. He was excited to go there. I mean, who wouldn't be? I mean, going to, they just won the championship, you know, that year. That the 86, I think, was the Celtics, you know, like of the 80s Boston Celtics, and probably one of the top teams all time, period. Like, I had to do a episode on teams and their top runs all time, and for Celtics, it was the 86 of that era of the Celtics. And then to have Len Bias coming in, I mean, Larry Bird was so excited. He was like, you know what? You get Len Bias, I'll come to the rookie camp.
I remember that. That was crazy.
That pretty much says it all right there.
You know what's even crazier is when you think about that draft, that 86 draft, if I remember correctly, like Brad Daugherty, who was 4 years at Carolina, was only 20 years old when he got drafted.
Wow.
He didn't turn 21 until like later in the year. And he did 4 years at Carolina. So when you think about his skill set, you think about his agility, how much he got better every year. He's a footer. You know what I'm saying? Like, you had to take him because Len was the most dominant player in college basketball. It wasn't even close, but the way they drafted back then was just so different, you know? So for Larry Bird to be excited about, you know, coming back and coming to rookie camp, which is something no one does. Veterans never came to rookie camp in summer league and all that. That wasn't a thing.
That pretty much told you how excited, you know, like he was to even get a talent at this level. When you look at that draft, you know, like you had, well, of course, we already talked about Brad Daugherty was in that draft. Ron Harper, who was a champion with the Bulls and the Lakers. You know, you had John Sally in that draft. Chuck Person was in that draft.
Sabonis.
Yep, Mark Sabonis.
Dennis Rodman.
Yep, Dennis Rodman. They had some hitters in that one.
Drazen Petrovic.
And
who is so underrated.
That's something that's going to have to be I have to talk about Drazen Petrovic. I'm about to start reading his biography that his brother wrote. He's one of my favorite Nets, but that's a whole other topic.
People are starting to bring him back up. What's my man named that played for the Houston Rockets? He's talking about him right now.
I know who you're talking about. He's been making the rounds on the pods.
Vernon Maxwell. Yeah.
He said he was harder to guard than MJ.
Because he ran off screens, and if he caught the ball, you knew he was going to take the jump shot. And if you ran out at him, he just hold the shot big, and you watch you go by and then knock down a shot, and he played off his pivot. He was amazing.
He was amazing. One thing about I always think about when it comes to Len Bias, say if he entered the league, was he signed a 5-year, $1.6 million deal with Reebok. So we would have had this whole Reebok, you know, having Len Bias versus Nike, you know, like with MJ and, you know, how we are today about
football. And that was a lot of money. $1.6 million
back then.
$1.6 million
deal. That was because they also saw the impact that MJ had on Nike. So, you know, like because that deal, Mike's deal, 84, and then you have Reebok in 86. They were like, you know what? We're going to invest up front. We're going to, you know what I mean? Signing him to that deal, they saw what the potential impact of that could be. But being drafted, he was on a, you know, right, you know, and then, you know, going home to party after that deal was signed, you know, like it was like, okay. His life was set to begin in the league. And then he parties that night, you know, like in the dorm back at the University of Maryland. Like one of his friends, Brian Tripley, you know, made comments that, you know, like him and Len, you know, they were casual users of cocaine. It wasn't that's what they were addicted to. It was just a party drug at the time. So, you know, it was something they did here and there. His parents didn't believe that Len Bias, you know, like was a casual user to them. You know, they just didn't believe it, you know, contrary to what Brian Tripley was saying. I just wanted to note that his family has definitely different views on that. But the thing that gets me about the night that Len Bias died was the pureness of the cocaine that was used. How in the heck did Ryan Tripley get cocaine?
I can't say who, but you got to remember, at the time, one of the biggest drug dealers in the country, you know, Rafael Edmonds was you know, they had that cocaine all over, you know, Maryland. Mm-hmm. He actually just came home, you know. So having that pure of a drug around, you know, I don't think it wasn't that difficult. That was a crack cocaine era, so they was getting great pure cocaine and, you know, diluting it with baking soda.
They were diluting it. Yeah, that's a good point too. But
you know,
I don't remember. Kind of, you know, if this was on the street though.
Yeah, it's on the street. I mean, that's what it was. You were getting, you know, a pure cocaine back then, and you were turning into crack. And the purer the cocaine, the more crack you can make because you can dumb it down or whatever. That's true.
I remember that. It's just that with, because, you know, like Len Bias had a seizure, never regained consciousness, and, you know, he would die of a.
You don't know how much cocaine can you snort. You don't know. I can remember them saying he had snorted a ridiculous amount of cocaine. Like, what are you doing? Like, you literally, you know, a lot of people were getting introduced to cocaine as a party drug at parties, at Hollywood parties, at industry parties, at, you know, Studio 54 and stuff like that. So, you know, it was in small amounts. People were, you know,
Because I heard it was a, I heard it, what we can say is that cocaine, they did coke, you know, he did cocaine that night. The amount, because I heard it was a small amount. You heard it was a lot. He did cocaine that night, and it was, and he went into a seizure and never regained consciousness.
So remember what they were talking about? They were saying that Lenny had an enlarged heart.
Yes.
But it's crazy because they say the same thing about Reggie Lewis. But what people didn't understand at the time is when you're an athlete, you know, your heart is a muscle. So the more athletic you are, the bigger your heart gets.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know what the effects were with the purity of the cocaine and how much he snorted or whatever.
Yeah, that's getting to technicality.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, but it's just like it was such a shock.
I cried.
It was a shock. I remember. Yep.
I cried. I was in high school. I cried.
I remember the adults around me were devastated at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember that. I was
going into my senior year. That was my junior year. Going into my senior year, that was 86. And I couldn't believe it. It didn't make sense.
I didn't, it didn't make sense. You know, the basketball team. I remember the basketball team being devastated. I couldn't believe it. You know what I mean? It was a shock.
But it makes sense. That's not something that we...
Like, it was like...
It wasn't something we saw on a regular basis. This wasn't normal. Like, if something like that happens now, it's like, oh, damn, yeah, that's messed up. But back then, it was like, wait, what?
What? Like, it was... I remember it being... It was like... You just got drafted. Like, where were you when you found out? Like, for me...
I don't even know where I was.
I don't remember where I was, but I remember finding out and it being a shock. And then when we did go back to school... it was like, you know, it was like a moment of silence. It was like, it you know, like us. the athletes were all like shook. I remember that.
It's crazy because, you know, I went to Canarsie High School in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And
Learned High School in East Orange, New Jersey. And it was,
it wasn't like. Like for so I was a basketball fan, you mm-hmm. know. So, like, I followed Michael Jordan. Nobody. Same. I introduced my best friends into following. Like, look, there's this guy, and I think he's an alien. Like, he moves differently. He walked differently. He had a different bop. I remember watching they played because I remember when UNC they played in Carmichael Arena. They didn't have the Dean Dome yet, so they played in Carmichael Arena, and the way North Carolina tradition is that you cannot walk on or or off the floor at North Carolina. And I watched Mike come out and he'd run to the corner and like dip and like drop his shoulder and I was like, wait, what is he doing? He was just weird. You know?
84. I will never forget when MJ came in the league. And
I was
an MJ fan as well. But with the only reason I knew about Lynn Bias because my stepfather watched a lot of basketball, and so Lynn Bias' name was, you know, that's, he was on the scene. They talked about it in the barbershops and like him, you know, him versus MJ, you know, like, you know, the young guns leading these, because it was like the big thing was like, well, Celtics fans were like, well, you know, we still got Larry and the guys, you know, ushering in the young boy, and they gonna train the young boy, and like those conversations. And,
it would have been, you know, so easy for him.
Transition of the guard. This MJ don't got nobody like that. Like he the man there.
Yeah, they would have won two more championships easily. Larry Bird might have been able to play a little bit more because a lot of the stress would have been taken off of him. You're talking about, I remember Worthy going to the Lakers, but then he broke his leg early, you know, with the Lakers situation. So he was still retaining his quickness, but he never got his full athletic ability back as an NBA player. Because if people watch highlights of Worthy in college, I mean, he really was getting up there. And it's crazy because he would talk about how Jordan was jumping just as high or higher than him, but Len Bias was jumping higher than all of them. So my thing is, I watched Mike's progression, how he got stronger, and as he got stronger, he jumped higher, he ran faster, because when he left Carolina, they told me he was running a 4.2, 4.3, 40. And I was like, wait, what? What are you, mm-hmm. serious? Mm-hmm. So when I look mm-hmm. at Bias, I think of, you know, he started lifting weights early. So that was his advantage. Then he would have got to the NBA and would have been lifting even more weights. He'd have got more, he would have got stronger. He'd have been in a system that would have mm-hmm. catered to him. He would have scored easier. You know, I think he would have challenged Michael Jordan for supremacy in the East. You know, it would have been a problem. The only thing Jordan had was he had a huge head start.
It also would have been interesting him versus the Pistons as well. Because remember, like, you know, like the Bad Boy Pistons era was also coming at that time.
Think about it. When you think about it, that 86 draft was John Sally and yep. Dennis Rodman.
And Dennis
but those
Rodman.
Those two guys would have nothing they would have been able to do him. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing. So I just mean like it would have been interesting in the East because, you know, we know what would happen in the East.
Yeah.
Like if you had those Celtics in the East, you know what I mean? That would have been something. We just were never gifted.
Yes.
Since college, I was like, what?
Isaiah Thomas's legacy would have been in trouble.
The alternate reality of, mm-hmm. you know, like, what if?
Isaiah Thomas's legacy would have been in trouble. Larry Bird's legacy would have been boosted up even more.
I think it would have been interesting what moves would the Bulls have made to counter, like, you get some veterans or something? Like,
But you got to remember, back then, guys were on long contracts.
That's
so there
true.
Wasn't a lot
it
of
wasn't
free
like today.
Agency
it
stuff.
Wasn't
yeah.
like today. Yeah.
Free agency wasn't a thing back then. You know, it was like, no, I'm with my team, staying with my team. I have a 10-year contract, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Free agency.
Nobody's renegotiating.
I forgot when the first free agency contract was. I just did some research on that for an episode I'm doing in the future. But it was a different world back then.
They had free agency, but guys were
widely celebrated yet. It wasn't that much of a thing.
Yeah, and then the shorter contracts because guys were doing upwards of 10-year contracts. I mean, you got to think about Magic Johnson, a 25-year contract.
Scottie Pippen contract.
Yeah, he did the 10-year. Yeah, that was ridiculous. Even though they told him not to, and I mean, sometimes you just gotta grin and bear. You gotta listen. I mean, but he still was making money off the court, which kind of still bothers me because Nike was still paying him a nice little something. So I just, when Scotty talks about I had to sign a contract, no, you didn't.
That's a whole other.
I love Scotty.
Also, the Knicks. The Knicks got Patrick Ewing in 85. So I just think the Knicks, I just think the East would have looked completely different. But, you know, we know that Bill Walton was injured, you know, he couldn't come back, you know, like in 87. So that, you know, like we knew this
He was Bill Walton times two because the thing about it is he spent 4 years in college.
No, all I'm saying is the Celtics, you know, they wouldn't have had Bill Walton. Because Kevin McHale, you know, his foot wasn't the same after those playoffs with the Lakers when he like broke his foot, you know, like he never got that repaired and he wasn't the same after that. So they would, but I think that Len Bias would have still like having someone like him in that lineup, you know, that would have been a really excellent transition of the guard for the Celtics and they could have competed in the East. They could have competed, you know, for, you know, an Eastern title and, you know, like, and competed with the, because I don't think the Bad Boys would have been able to do, you know, like any, you know, with Len Bias in that lineup, that could have really given them some problems. Like we will never know. You know what I mean? Like the East would have looked different if Len Bias had lived. Unfortunately, he did not. And one of the effects of that is something that impacted Black, Latino, and minority communities for decades to come. You know, the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986, mm-hmm. also called the Len Bias Law. And I think one of the things, the reason why this, it was a shock, Maryland is right next door to Washington, D.C. Also, we got to remember, you know, that, you know, like Lynn Bias died June 19th, 1986. So school, you know, when you think about it, we didn't really deal with that in school until the fall. You know what I mean? When it happened, and we were, you know what I mean? It was really at the end of the year. Then we got to remember there was another death. Don Rogers at the Cleveland Rogers died of cocaine on June 27th. You know, like he was the 1985 Defensive Rookie of the Year. And it was such a shock to, and Congress was, you know, Congress felt like they had to act. They felt like they had to assemble, because it was all on, it was the news. It was on the news, like every night that it let off on the news. And you had congressmen feeling like they had to respond. And, you know, then you bring on the mandatory minimums of crack cocaine, you know, like mandated a 5-year sentence for 5 grams. You had congressmen now saying they didn't realize how small a quantity that was and what type of impact that ended up having on Black and brown communities, because as we know, crack cocaine impacted, you know, the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine sentence guidelines were completely different at that time. And at first, it was like a 100-to-1 ratio, you know, when you look at it, like 5 grams for 5 years, you know, like while, you know, with, you know, for powder cocaine, their numbers were a heck of a lot higher than that. So you didn't have the same impacts on first, you know, you have white versus white people versus and Black people, because in the Black community, you had a lot of crack cocaine. Let's keep in mind that Lynn Bias and Roger Brown both died of an overdose of powder cocaine. But with the anti-abuse law of 1986, the anti-drug law of 1986, they came down hard on crack cocaine because of the crack houses and the publicized crack houses. So they had that crack law too, crack house law too. So it was like you had so many, really tons and tons of Black men, Black women being locked up for years. Some of them getting these crazy sentences, and years later
for being users, which is crazy to me.
Yeah,
not even saying they were distributors; they were users. And it what doesn't make sense is the opioid epidemic that our country went through. Instead of locking them up, they opened up, you know,
the response was completely different.
Yes, you know, it's like.
They locked up Black and brown people.
Poor white people, they're suffering. But with opioid,
that's not what they did. They wanted to get treatment centers and not treat, and wanted to get them help. With, you know, with crack cocaine, it was throw them in jail for forever and throw away the key. You know, it was crazy. The impact on mass incarceration, I mean, it's just insane.
But I think that was totally a government setup type of thing. I mean, it's crazy because I remember the campaign Crack is Whack came out in 1986 as well. You know, the dude painted a mural in Harlem or whatever, and then that became like a national thing or whatever. They started, you know, having all the crack cocaine commercials or whatever. It was a war on crack, but it really was a war on Black people, because let's be clear, I have a really strong knowledge about, you know, about the drug. I had family members who abused it. I have family members who were part of the problem or whatever. Crack cocaine wasn't something that was created in the United States. Crack cocaine was created in Colombia, you know, because, you know, cocaine in Colombia was so inexpensive, like $1,000 for a kilo, and some they still couldn't afford it. So in Colombia, they created crack cocaine. How did that drug get over to the U.S. and how did we learn how to make it? You know, Oliver North testified, you know, in front of Congress or whatever, that the United States, the CIA and so forth, they brought cocaine and flooded the ghettos with cocaine. And so if they flood the ghettos with cocaine, knowing that in the ghettos you could not afford it the same way you couldn't afford it in Colombia, you know, they basically taught certain people how to make the drug, make crack, and they knew that now the poor people can afford it, and they flooded the nation with it. That was something that was, you know, that was a government thing. So just things like that, when you talk about slavery, when you talk about drug abuse, crack cocaine, when you talk about all these things, redlining, all the things that they that this country has done to Black America, Black and brown people, and the conversation about reparations never comes up. It's never taken seriously right now. Is the most painful thing ever to me, because every other ethnicity and race that's gone through something as horrific as that has gotten some type of reform, some type of reparation to their community, and they refuse to do that to us. So, yeah, I believe Len Bias was used. They used him to further their backroom conversations about how to destroy Black people, in my opinion. That's just my opinion.
And they definitely used him to, and I hate that his name is linked with this law. Like, Len Bias Law is what they call it, and I hate that. A man that had, young man that has so much promise, that was going to, you know, like, bless the basketball courts with his skill, and, you know, give us a world that we'll never know.
It doesn't make sense.
You know, what if Len Bias lived, and now he's attached to this law that caused, you know, really... A generation was lost when you think about, like, you know, that we're locked up and, you know, just had irreparable impact.
It doesn't make sense.
Generations of people.
Like, it doesn't make sense.
It's just insane. And I hate that his name is linked to this. I hate it.
Yeah.
You know, like, so when I want to celebrate Lim, you know, when you, I feel like you can't talk about Lim Bias without talking about the impact of this law had on people for generations. Apologies will never get back what people lost, and they still, and then, you know, they died of, and I'll say it again, both of these men, Len Bias, and, because, you know, there are two people that died, Len Bias and Don Rogers, they died from powder cocaine over, you know, like, usage that led to their, you know, their eventual deaths. Not crack, but the crack cocaine portion of it was heavily taxed with the jail, meaning like the jail disparity there, the jail sentence and the punishment versus powder cocaine was completely different. And then they attached Len Bias's name to the law when he wasn't even, so it's just insane. And like we just said, it's a pathetic and pitiful that Len Bias's name is attached to the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986. It's referred to as a Len Bias Law, which is unjust. But as basketball fans, as lovers of the history of the game, we can't help but wonder what could have been if Len Bias was still with us and was able to, you know, all we can do is imagine, you know what I mean? Like, LeBron came later, but sometimes I think when I think of Len Bias and the potential, you know what I mean? Like, who knows how we would have been talking about him? You know what I mean? His size at that age, coming in as a rookie, man, we'll never know. But yeah, it is the greatest what if. What if the Boston Celtics got Len Bias? What if Len Bias, what would have happened in the East with Len Bias being drafted to the Celtics, able to take on a lot of that work that some of those older guys couldn't, and there was a good transition of the Celtics from, you know, the big three of the Celtics, you know, McHale, Bird, Parrish, and those guys, you know, transition with Len Bias coming, Reggie Lewis eventually coming, and what could have happened? We'll never know. You know, like, would Detroit would have Would they still have won two championships? You know, like what would have happened with the Bulls? Because as we said, free agency isn't the free agency of the day. So what would have happened versus the Bulls? It would have been great marketing, you know, Michael Jordan versus Lin Bai. You know, that marketing, like the commissioner would have had a field day with
Yeah, he would have. He definitely would have. And it's crazy because they wouldn't have guarded each other, but there would have been instances where they did.
Yep.
You know, go up against each other. It's crazy because Scottie Pippen would have had to check Lin Bias, yep. And that would have been painful for him. And it's crazy. I remember when Len came in that 86, that was his 86, 87 season. Mike had an amazing year, but Kevin McHale, he had his best scoring year that year in 86.
Yep. Yep.
I think he put up like 26 a game. You know, so, and he was like first team all defense. I mean, and then that started him on a roll of like all stars and all defensive teams and stuff like that. So you talk about the next 5 years, you'd have had Kevin McHale and Len Bias as two front court pieces.
Yeah.
And you literally could have put Larry Bird as a two.
Larry Bird, even though his back was already messed, he wouldn't have had to play as many minutes.
Yeah, because Bird didn't just go out totally until like 91. That 91-92 year, that was like his last year.
That was his last year, yeah.
Yeah, so
but,
91.
But from what I read, he was already having back problems. And
yeah, he was doing too much. He was running on that hard Celtics floor and. You know, they would talk about his work ethic and how hard he worked. Mm-hmm. And in the summertime, he was shooting outside on his outdoor basketball court, you know, on that concrete. So he was killing his back. And then
his back was hurting for a while. But 91, that when it got to that 91s, his back was done. He couldn't do it anymore at that point.
Yeah, he was done. Couldn't. He was done.
But he would have been able to transfer his knowledge. You know what I mean?
But I think he wouldn't have to play as much. Because when you think about the amount of minutes guys played in the 80s, guys were playing 39, 40 minutes. That was on a regular. Nowadays, if you play 35 minutes, people are like, oh, my God, you're trying to kill these guys. It's crazy because the Knicks team, they played all those playoff minutes. Oh, they're playing 20-some minutes. They're tired. And I'm just like, wait, what? That's what they used to play in the 90s and the 80s all day long, especially in the playoffs.
And they never wanted to come off the court. You know what I mean? Are you kidding? And when you think about it, Red Auerbach is already goated. You know, when you think about him being the first, you know, Celtics being the first team to field an all-black starting five, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s. And it's funny, him and Auerbach then being connected to the Celtics of the 80s. And like, and then ushering in the Lin Bias era. He's already like seen as, you know, one of the greatest minds in the history of the game.
He was an innovator. He was an innovator because he's like, you know what? I'm going to get these black players. He was an innovator where everybody was like,
He just wanted to win. He didn't care. He wanted to win.
That's right. He wanted to win.
And, you know, like I've been thinking, like he would have been, he was there for the Bill Russell era. He was the GM during the Larry Bird era. And then he would have been ushering in the Lin Bias era. Like, He was on to something. And
yeah, he's on to something. It's like, yeah, black players.
In the middle of that, you have Larry Bird, Kevin McHale. You have that era as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we will never know. And one day we're going to do a look back on the Celtics. Because
We need to celebrate Len the same way we celebrate Cheryl Miller, in my opinion. Although she won those two championships or whatever, I think that was her first 2 years. But I'm in regards to what he could have been.
Yep.
And they don't.
Because Cheryl Miller on the women's side.
Because of the drugs. Like Cheryl would have.
Cheryl was the injury. Yep.
Yeah. Since he got hurt, she never got a chance to play pro ball. She got hurt. Len died. Like, it's definitely two different things. But in regards to what we knew they would have been. At those level, at those next levels, is only our imagination. We can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to do an episode on Cheryl Miller because I don't think people will fully understand. She just had she was just on Mark Jackson's podcast and she was talking about the game of today.
She still talks.
I love her. She's trying to get back into broadcasting now, I think. But I think the interesting part she said at the end, she said, Asia, because she marvels at how great Asia is today, like as a player. And she was like, that girl.
Asia is reminiscent of Cheryl.
Yeah, that Asia young lady can play. She said, I'm going to say something controversial. I think I could have hung with her. I think I could have defended her. I think I would have been a good matchup for her. Yeah. And you know what? We'll never know. You know what I mean? Like, but you know, I was like, I just think the game has evolved so much, and that's a whole other conversation we're talking about.
Don't get me started. We'll be here all night.
But let me just say, to close out Lynn Bias, we will never know what would have happened with you. All we can say is what could have happened, what would have happened if you would have entered the NBA. You're the what greatest what if of one time of all time in basketball. We'll never know. And that's why every year his name comes up all the time, because fans feel robbed that we did not get to see you in the league. We never got to experience you in the league. But even more heartbreaking is the family of Lynn Bias. The parents of Lynn Bias ended up losing his brothers a few years later. And my heart goes out to the Bias family. Jay Bias lost his life a few years later. And his was gun violence, like he was shot. But my heart goes out to the Bias family. But, you know, here at Hoops and Huddle, we're going to celebrate those, the greats of the game from years past. We're going to celebrate some of the ones of today, too. But we're going to really dive into the history of sports, because I'm not just going to limit it to hoop. It's good, you know, some football. Like, there's some things coming up in black quarterbacks. We will discuss it here.
We need to discuss that, because this generation, Generation Z, they don't really study the history of the game. And I think that's crazy. I mean, I can remember watching a video of Gary Payton talking to a high school, you know, camper or whatever.
Yeah.
And he gave him some amazing advice. And then one of the coaches walked over and was like, do you even know who that is? And the kid was like, no. I'm just like, are you serious? Can you imagine in baseball, guys not knowing who Barry Bonds is? Can you imagine in football, a running back not knowing who Barry Sanders is? You know what I'm saying?
And like, also in the women's game, we have a whole generation that don't know who the greats of the game of years past
I feel
like it's my responsibility to present the history of the game and share it with those who basically want to hear it. You know, you can sit at your desk while you're working and hit play. Next week, we'll have another episode, Hoops and Huddle, talking about another great of the game from years past. But thank you for listening. Lynn Bias, forever love. Bless. Thank you for being here, and we're out.